Oh yeah, it's that time again, guys. Welcome back. I hope you're well. I hope everything is going good with your life. Welcome back to the Headshot Crew Pod. That's the official name of this podcast, by the way. I just realized that I never referred to it by its name. It's just the podcast, but it's the Headshot Crew Pod. Obviously, linked to the Headshot Crew. If you're not a member, visit headshotcrew.com. Get part of, you know, be a part of it. It's an awesome community. Anyway, before we get started, guys, you know I have to drop a shout out, guys. This week, June 19th, Andre Berzhikov. I hope that's how you pronounce your name. Again, guys, I struggle with last names because we're in an international community and people are in from all over the world, you know, not only English names, but some foreign names, and sometimes I struggle with them. But anyway, Andre won headshot of the week for June 19th. Congratulations, Andre. Very cool shot. Looking forward to seeing you enter again. All right, guys, this week I have the great Dave Geffen, guys. He is an amazing commercial and, you know, just fashion photographer. He's also a very cool videographer. He's worked with Peter Hurley in the past, and you know he's one of his second shooters in his New York studio. It was great having a conversation with Dave. I think you guys will love it. I know you guys will love it. So here we go. Enjoy the podcast, guys.
All right, enough of that. Get over here. We're gonna start right now. 3, 2. 1, 2, 3!
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Geffen is in the house. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Pedro. Doing good, thanks.
Good. Long time no speak. I guess we're not looking at each other, but long time no speak. Last time we spoke to each other was 2015.
Was it 2015? I thought it was 2016. Jesus, that's a long time ago. Can we swear on this podcast, by the way, or do I have to be clean?
Feel free. Well, at start, when I first started it, I meant to be clean, but then all the guests have cursed, so okay. Feel free. So it's now an explicit thing.
Sure. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to overstep a boundary. So I was about to say, holy shit, has it really been 3 years since we last spoke? I thought it was 2 years.
No, three.
Wow. That time has flown by.
That's what happens.
Well, listen, it's an honor to be part of this podcast show that you're doing, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you. And last time, so I remember 2015, you were working with Peter, working on his videos, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think it was in 2015. I think it was 2014 through to 2015. Peter and I began seriously collaborating, and by seriously I mean we worked for a year together. I would say maybe a couple of times a month, once a month, something like that. But we would create weekly video content for his Headshot Crew, and that was the kind of the basis of initially how Peter and I began to work together and collaborate on stuff, and that's obviously where I met you. So yeah, that was the start of what I did with Peter, which was really creating pretty consistent video content for him. We created 52 videos over the course of like a year, basically.
Right. And right now you're one of his associate photographers in the studio, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So after we created all of that content, Peter said to me, look, you've basically gone through an entire year's worth of like education of what I do. Why don't you shoot for me? Which was really funny because if you rewound the clock a few years, and I sort of discovered Peter in 2012, if you told me that I would have been in Peter's studio being asked to be a headshot photographer and actually saying yes as well to that, because I never thought I would be a headshot photographer, I never would have believed you. But that's in effect exactly what he did. I wasn't an associate off the bat. He did invite me to be in effect his second shooter in New York, which was obviously a huge honor, and it still is to work at Peter's studio. And obviously now we also have an extremely talented photographer, Brittany, who's Peter's studio manager and is also a headshot and portrait photographer at the studio. So it's really the three of us, I guess, there. But yeah, I would say in late 2015, we finished the video content, and that's when he asked me to shoot for him. So it's coming up on 3 years, I guess, I've been shooting at studio, which again is about the last time we spoke, which is just bizarre because that time has just flown.
Yeah, no, it tends to do that, especially like after you have a kid. I've my kid's two now, and like it's yeah. like after I still it still feels like yesterday my girlfriend and I found out she was pregnant, and he's two now. Like time just zips.
I know,
by.
And I like we were saying just before we got started, I thought it was 2 years that we last spoke, and you were like, no, it was three, and I was like, Jesus, that's even another year on top of the couple of years I thought it was. And it feels like it was just yesterday that you, I, and Peter were hanging out and we went for a coffee and you and I were talking and you were like, oh, you know, I've got this girl back in Portugal and I'm not really sure what to do. And, you know, it just literally feels like yesterday. So I completely agree. Time is speeding up as we get older. That's what it feels like. It's sort
so
of,
you
it's
just, so basically you just lost a year. You thought you had two, but you really had three. You just lost a year.
I completely lost a year. So I'm down a year. I don't know how to get that year back. I guess it's never coming back. I just have to live with the fact I just lost a year. But this isn't related to photography, but it is kind of fascinating. Someone explained this to me a few years ago, and it sort of makes sense. It's like when you're 20, 21, and you're in your early 20s, time doesn't seem to go as quick. Now that I'm a little bit older, 1 year represents much less of a fraction of your overall life, and that's why it seems like time speeds up as you get older, because instead of being like 1/20th of your overall life, it becomes 1/30th, 1/40th, etc., etc.
Oh.
And that fractional element is obviously smaller and therefore feels shorter. I don't know if that's the case, but it definitely feels like time is moving more quickly as you get older. To me, anyway.
It really does. It's like,
yeah.
I still do that nowadays. Like, we're in July now.
I know.
As of recording this, I'm like, what? What happened to the rest? What happened? We just started 2018.
I know.
We're midway there.
I feel like that every year, especially since I moved to New York. And maybe we'll get into this, but since coming here and setting myself up as a photographer and videographer or cinematographer, it just life just seems to have gone from kind of a run in terms of the time in which things sort of race by to an outright sprint.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I can't believe it was as of this August, which is, as you said, it's July right now that we're recording this. As of August, which is next month, I would have been here for 6 years. And it would have been 7 years since I left London. And that to me is kind of shocking because that just feels like yesterday. Let alone when you and I were hanging out, that stuff just feels like yesterday. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it's, you know, time flies when you're having fun, as the old saying goes, right? So I must be having fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
And you sure are in an environment that is fun conducing.
Yeah. Inducing. Do you mean in New York City or with Peter or...
Yes to both.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a freelancer, right? Brittany is a full-time studio manager and photographer, obviously, as and when she books shoots. But Brittany is full-time with Peter. I'm a freelancer. So I set my business up in late 2012. And Peter and I still do work together. And obviously, I shoot at his studio for him. But that's on a freelance basis. So... I guess I would say I see Peter maybe once a week, maybe a little bit more recently because I've been in and out of the studio a bit more recently. But there's often times where I won't see him for a long time because I'm not physically there all the time.
Yeah.
And also because of his travel schedule, I would say in the last 2 or 3 years, his travel schedule has kind of just gone nuts.
Indeed.
So he's often away... Especially over the summer, he's often away for months at a time. And I've been traveling a little bit as well with work, only domestically, not internationally, but his and my schedule in the last couple of months, I would say, have been a little bit like, as the old saying goes, ships in the night, where you just sort of, you pass each other briefly, you see each other, and then it's kind of like he goes off to something, I go off to something. So, but yeah, more recently, I would say the last few weeks, I've been in and out of the studio a bit more. It's felt a bit more like old times. It's been good.
All right. Yeah. So take me back to when you first got started in photography. What made you get interested in it, and how did it pan out until today?
Sure. And when you say first got into or interested in photography, do you mean when I was a kid, or do you mean professionally?
I mean, I really want to know how you got into professional photography, but it's also interesting to know how you got in, how you, you know, what made you want to take pictures for a living.
Sure. And in fact, I think the two are interrelated.
Sure.
So I guess the professional side of things, because I'm in my early 40s, just so if anyone's listening to this wondering who the hell I am and how old I am, I'm in my early 40s, and I kind of did something crazy that most people advise not to do, which is when I was in my mid-30s, I think it was 36, when I actually landed in New York. So I took a year out and traveled around the world. It was like a 10 or 11 month stint, went backpacking, traveled around the world, came and landed in New York in end of August of 2012. Before that, I'd had a 15 year career in business. I was a consultant, a project manager. I'd worked predominantly in the private sector, but I'd also spent 5 years working in the public sector as a project manager. What I did was I completely pivoted and transitioned and decided to set my business up, which was basically terrifying, because after 15 years of being a salaried executive and on a particular career path, I came here and decided to change everything. And I didn't have a background in photography. Professionally, I didn't have a background in cinematography or video work professionally. I had never stepped foot inside a photo studio, and I knew nobody in this industry when I arrived in New York. So that was late 2012. And the reason I did that, and this relates to, I guess, my interest in cinema and photo, goes back to very early when I was a child, and I don't exactly know why, but I was always fascinated by movies, and I loved movies. I used to consume movies, and I still do to this day, but I used to consume movies like crazy. I tend to be one of those people who can be extroverted but also very introverted, and I would be quite happy to sit at home and go to the local video store with my dad and my brother and rent movies and just stay in and watch movies. And that, like I say, that continues to this day. I'm just a huge lover of cinema. And I grew up wanting to be a film director. So when I was a young teenager, that was my career aspiration. I wanted to be a film director. And at that point in England, there wasn't really much of a British film, as in movie or TV, career path. It was kind of looked down upon a little bit. It was like, that doesn't really exist here. That's something that you do if you are born in Hollywood or Los Angeles or New York or something. And I decided to take a bit more of a secure career path, which meant sort of putting those dreams to the side, I guess, and having a 15-year career in business as an executive. I was quite happy doing that, and I worked with good people on good projects. But I always felt that as I was getting older, and as we were talking earlier about time speeding up, I always felt like, something, doesn't feel quite right, but it feels like I'm on this path, and if I don't hop off this path, I'm going to blink and I'm going to be 60 something, and I never will have lived out my childhood dream.
Right.
Just to go back to the childhood, my dad wasn't a professional photographer, but he was a serious amateur photographer. And I always remember him taking his camera with us if we would go on vacation. And in fact, he turned our small attic space into a dark room. So I remember being very young, and he and I would go up and develop film in the dark room, he would turn on this red light, and I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. And then we would have the developer and the fixer and all of the chemicals out in these small chemical baths, and we would use the equipment to basically make prints, small prints. But I distinctly remember that. I distinctly remember the smell. And I remember, like many other people, I guess, who grew up in dark rooms or kind of have experienced that, it was like this magical thing when an image would seep onto the paper. And that didn't mean that I wanted to be a photographer, but I remember being very young and being exposed to that and getting my dad to show me how to use his camera and being fascinated by it. Mainly the technical side. I was like, how does this stuff work? Look at all of these cool buttons on this camera. And he had a very simple, I think it was a Pentax 35mm SLR. I think he had one lens that was probably a 50. But I remember loving kind of the cool look of it and how it functioned. It was only when I traveled in 2011 and 2012, when I took that year out, this was when my wife and I at the time left London to move to America, that I got absolutely fascinated by photography, because I'd always dabbled with video and I'd messed around with video editing for probably about 10 years leading up to when I left London. And I can talk a little bit about that because I do have quite a bit of experience as a hobbyist in video editing. But I remember becoming absolutely fascinated with photography again. And I'd always sort of taken photos, but it was more like snapshots, I would say. It wasn't like I was putting too much thought into it. And I remember reading a few books. I can't remember exactly the name of them, but I have them still in my bookshelf here. But they're photography books by a guy called Michael Freeman, who I think is a British guy. And it's kind of like how we see and what makes a strong image and the power of composition and why one image is stronger than another. And I remember as we were traveling around the world and we went through Asia and South America and we spent 2 months driving across North America, I remember just devouring these books and more content around what makes a strong image strong. And I just remember I stopped shooting video because I used to always shoot quite a lot of video. I stopped shooting video and I ended up taking probably 50,000 still photos from that trip of us going around the world. And I remember becoming obsessed by it, and that obsession still exists today with my photography and my video work, because I think the two are very much interrelated. But that's quite a long-winded answer, but that's how I got my start professionally. I took this huge risk because I transitioned away from the career path I was on. But at that point, I sort of said to myself, there's more risk in continuing on that career path that I'm on rather than taking the risk to set my business up and to jump into the world of photo and video. Because I was always sort of, you know, like I say, lacking the confidence, I guess, to actually go off and do it. And coming to New York and after spending that year traveling, it really gave me the shot in the arm that I needed. And I said to myself, there's now more risk if I don't set the business up and jump into this, because I can always go back to my other career, but I want to see where this goes. And that was it. And that was at the end of 2012. But I always was a lover of photo and cinema and cinematography since I was a young kid. I just never had the balls to really jump off and do anything with it.
Right. And and your path has led you into two different paths. Well, they kind of intersect, but you've got your photography and you've got your videography. How do you separate those two? How do those two came about? Which one came first?
Yeah, you are right. They definitely intersect. And it's funny because I spent the weekend editing at the computer, and I've edited it's for a jewelry client, a new client of mine that I worked with last month, and they wanted me to do both the stills photography and the video for the campaign shoot that we shot. And I said to them, wow, that's quite a lot for one person to do. I'd never done that before. And they specifically said that they really liked my eye, and they wanted my eye for both the stills and the video, which, you know, was really nice, and that's exactly where I'm trying to get myself to, that point where clients are booking me for my eye, whether it's for photo or video. But I do sit quite firmly in predominantly in the video world. I do consider myself a photographer. I carry, I have a Leica M6, a film Leica, which I've been carrying everywhere, every day practically for the last 4 years. But I get paid predominantly for my video work. But I definitely do both. And obviously through Peter, I do headshots and I do portraits at his studio. What came first? In terms of the professional side, I built the business in 2012 off the back of my video work and my editing. And that was a very clear move on my part. One, because I had experience in the world of video editing. And back then, a couple of things was happening. One was that the cost of data rates for our phones here in the States was coming down. And also the connection speed was going up. So I knew that people were going to consume more and more video. And so I knew video was going to be in demand. So commercially, I thought video is a good place to be. And the other thing was, like I was saying before, I had at that point probably somewhere in the region of, I want to say 8 years of editing experience. And not particularly in-depth editing experience, but I've been editing on a fairly consistent basis since the mid, 2005, 2006 is when I started to get into it. And that's related to a hobby of mine where I would make videos and stuff like that. It wasn't related to jobs. It wasn't related to the professional side, I would say, of the video world. But I loved doing that. It was like a hobby. So I still get predominantly paid for video work, but I do, fortunately, get to dabble in both. And it's funny because most people, especially as they become more serious with what they're doing, they either stick to photo or they stick to the moving image and video. And I can't really choose. And I do think that there's a distinct overlap, particularly when we're talking about what makes a strong frame and the eye and the vision that a photographer or videographer, cinematographer has, and how there's an overlap between those. And in fact, a lot of great film directors and cinematographers were also really good stills photographers. Stanley Kubrick being one in particular. There was an exhibition in New York about a month or two ago, and I went to see that. And it was fascinating to see what his stills photography was like and how that sort of started to influence his movie making and his cinematographer's eye. So I'm predominantly known for video work, and I do both. And even for my own personal edification, my own personal growth, I would say that photography, even though I get paid predominantly for video work, photography is the predominant personal work outlet for me. And that's through carrying that Leica everywhere and doing a lot of street photography in New York, basically, or wherever I happen to be, but predominantly New York.
Gotcha. So looking at your work, there's a very strong stylistic approach to it. I do my homework basically, and I went on your social media, and you have a very strong voice in your work. So, by which I mean, I can tell looking at it, you can start finding like patterns, and you start to find, you know, it's a Dave Geffen shot. I can't really explain what it really means. How do you develop that? How did you find that style of yours?
Well, first of all, thank you, because that means a lot. In fact, that means more than anything, really. So I am really grateful that you said that, because that's really been the predominant driver for me since setting up my business, is trying to develop something of a style. And I'm assuming when you're talking about my work, you mean my Instagram stuff and the street photography, the black and white stuff. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely my personal work. That's the thing that I capture with the Leica. It's all film. For the last 4 years, it's all been film. but obviously my professional work, I think the two definitely overlap. And for me, the whole thing about developing a style and this artistic element with photography, because if you remember when I was talking to you, my fascination when I was young was with my dad's camera. It was like a gadget. It was, you know, had all these buttons and dials. It was more the technical element that was sort of fascinating. But once this became a profession, and like I say, once I got really into the more graphic design element of what makes a strong frame, I really started to explore more of the artistic side of what gives someone a particular voice. Like, why does a painter paint in a particular way or style? Why does a photographer or a cinematographer have a particular style? Where does that style come from? And how does it change over time? And the reason I became fascinated around that was primarily because, you know, I'd come from a very staid and linear kind of corporate existence where I'd never questioned this stuff before. I didn't consider myself to be particularly artistically gifted or anything like that. But as soon as I moved into this field of photo and video and a more creative field, it became something of an obsession. And I remember actually, and you will know the website F-Stoppers, and I'm sure most people listening to this will know F-Stoppers. I was a writer for F-Stoppers between, I think, 2013 and 15 or 16. And one of the things that I was really obsessed with was style. And if you go back and look at some of my old articles, one of the very earliest ones was, you know, where does a style come from and how do we develop it? So going back to your question, first of all, like I say, thanks very much for the nice words. That really means a lot because for me to have a voice, to be known for a particular style is really key. It's really kind of what I want to develop within myself. And the reason for that is obviously personally that's important, but also professionally, I think, with the internet and digital photography and video and so on and so forth, it's very easy to copy someone's style. It's very easy to copy someone's technique. The way that we would differentiate ourselves and on a commercial level and be successful, I think, is to continue to make sure that we keep focused on creating a style and a vision, right? Now, that doesn't mean that you can just do it overnight, but I do think that that's a very important thing for us to do from a commercial perspective, is to differentiate ourselves, because everyone can copy each other. So you want to be doing something different, right?
Yeah.
The second aspect to it is, I think if it's a given then that we want to be different and we want to sort of stand out, how do we get to that point where we can consistently do it? It's like anything. I think we have to practice and not just kind of take thousands and thousands of images or shoot thousands of hours of video and so on and so forth. It's about what most people talk about in terms of how do we get good at anything. You've got to practice and work hard at it, but you've got to also reflect back on why are you shooting the stuff you're shooting? Like, what is it within you that draws you to shoot a headshot in a particular way? And that can also extend to any form of photography or video work. It's like, this is the artistic kind of questioning. It's like, why am I drawn to a particular style? Why am I drawn to the style of other photographers or cinematographers or whatever? What is it within me that I'm trying to express? And I think, honestly, I think one of the reasons I set my business up, the main reason, in fact, is not just to make money, although that's obviously very important in New York, where the cost of living is extremely high. It's really a bit of a voyage of self-discovery, if I can call it that, because for me, anyone's style is just a reflection of themselves. And that's why people's styles can change and can flex over time, because we as people change, right? And as we change, our styles adapt. But there's always something that's consistent with people. I think, how does one develop a soul? I think you have to do it with practice and a concerted form of practice, which is not, you can't just buy a camera and say, right, I'm going to shoot 10,000 shots and then I'll have my style, I'll have my vision. It really requires some kind of reflection and meditation on exactly what I was talking about, which is, why are we drawn to the things we're drawn to? Who are we trying to emulate and why? And more than just, oh, well, that's a really cool photographer, or they can take an amazing headshot, or whatever it may be. you have to kind of ask within yourself, why are you drawn to a particular style? Because then you start to understand yourself more. And then when you get those insights, you can start to hone in on understanding why you like the stuff you do. And then your work becomes, to a degree, it exemplifies some form of consistency. And I think naturally then you start to produce consistent images. And as you said to me very nicely, oh, that's a Dave Geffen shot. And other people have said the same thing, which is, it means so much to me, because that's really something I'm very passionate about, both for my business, but also obviously on a personal level.
Yeah, of course. I think we're all working on that, right? Trying to find our voice. But then there's the other aspect. So when you're shooting headshots in Peter's studio, are you following his quote unquote formula, or are you trying to find your own thing?
So here's the thing that where Peter and I differ massively. And I think this is not only okay, I think that we should all think about this when either we're trying to learn under someone else's tutelage, as be it a photographer, or we look to and aspire to be like someone else, as in the photo or the video world, or whatever capacity it is. We aren't all the same, right? Peter's style is what we, certainly in New York, and his associates try and exemplify. We don't try and copy it, but we try and have it consistent, because that's what he's looking to do. It's part of his wider headshot crew and an associate and his kind of photographer progression banner and brand. And that is great, because that means it's consistent. The difference is that how I interact with the client, and this is why actually it's surprising, because as I said to you before, I never thought I would shoot headshots, but this is what I really get out of headshots. How I interact with the client, how I engage with the subject, how I get them to give me what I need when they themselves don't know what they need, and I'm trying to find within them what I need, what I'm trying to see, what makes them look good and natural, is completely different from Peter. So, and I think that's probably the case for 99% of other headshot photographers, let's say. None of us are really like Peter. Peter is a very unique kind of character, and how he interacts with his subject is very different from probably 99% of us. And I think that that's good, that's fine, because we need to find our own, if we want to use the term style again, we need to find our own style of how we interact with our subjects, because that interaction with our subject, be it for a headshot or a portrait, or even for my video work, if I'm shooting with models who are very comfortable being in front of a camera, but they might not have worked with me before, so it's still a new experience for them and for myself. And so you still have this hurdle to overcome of how do I get my subject at ease? How do I form a bond with them when we're complete strangers? How do I get them to give me what I need when I'm trying to find what I need as well? So stylistically, in terms of the image and the aesthetic of the image and the lighting and so forth, yes, we're very much trying to exemplify Peter's sort of style within the realm of a headshot. The interaction and how you get those shots and how I do that is very different from Brittany. It's very different from Peter. And actually, the makeup artist that works with us in the studio says, she gave me a really nice compliment. She said that you always make your clients, particularly the female clients, feel very at ease. And I think that's because I empathize with people, and I think to myself, and you know, the times I've had to get in front of the camera, it can be nerve-wracking, right? Especially if you're not used to it. And you kind of, my job is to make people relaxed, right? It's not like, it's a given that we're going to get some good shots. But if they're not relaxed, if they're not natural, if they're not happy, if they're not enjoying themselves and enjoying the experience, we're not going to get what we need. So my job, first and foremost, is to make people feel good, to make them feel relaxed, to make them feel chilled out. If they've got, like, if they're self-conscious or conscious of certain things on their face or their body, if we're doing a portrait or whatever, it's for me to put all of that stuff out the window and to put them totally at ease. Because once they relax then they get into it. Then we start to get good stuff. Then it's a virtuous circle. They see the good stuff and they're like, oh, wow, I didn't know we could get stuff like that. And then it gives them even more of a boost. And so my job, which is funny, because when I was a consultant for the last 5 years of my career as a project manager, it was exactly the same thing. You walk into a client's office and there can be very senior people and they're stressed, they're worried about stuff, right? And your job is, first of all, to, even if you're stressed yourself, not show that stress and just chill them out. And in fact, Peter does use a similar type of saying. He's like, chill them out and pump them up. I remember we did a video on that. You've got to just make people relaxed and then give them a sense of like, it's going to be okay. We're going to get good stuff, and reassure them. And that really is my first and foremost job. And how Peter and I do that is very different. But that's because it's a reflection of our different personalities, you know?
And it has to be different. You have to find your own voice, because if you're trying, I think I was talking about this with Brittany, is if you're trying to use Peter's personality and Peter's way of saying things, it's never going to come out as genuine. People have the ability to sense when you're being fake, as opposed to, you know, saying things because it's coming out of you instead of it being scripted in a way, quote unquote.
100%. I completely agree. And it, you know, it's difficult, right? This stuff takes years and it takes a lot of kind of practice and mistakes and then understanding. And that's where I was saying before about that reflective element of what's working, what am I drawn to? That's really important, especially when people don't have, you know, thousands of hours or years of experience with this stuff. Because I've been to some of Peter's workshops. I filmed some a few years ago. I taught at his thing, the headshot cruise that we did in 2016. I've done some of his stuff, and some of his students will get behind the camera and they'll try and be like Peter in terms of their personality. Now, that's understandable, because they see that as being the reflection of a successful headshot photographer. So they're trying to mirror that. Exactly. But the thing is that you're absolutely right. And this stuff takes time to understand. And if anyone's listening to this and they're at the starting point of headshot stuff or portrait stuff or even video stuff where they're working with people, the key thing to understand is that authenticity is key. And especially, as you say, if you're inauthentic, if you're trying to just do something that isn't you, that will come across. And it then changes the dynamic or the energy or whatever you want to call it between your subject or your subjects and you as the photographer or the video person or whatever. So you have to understand, what is it? How are you going to be comfortable to get the stuff that you want? And you know, there's hundreds of famous photographers who were not very confident and so on and so forth. That, you know, people like Irving Penn apparently never used to talk to his subjects very much. He would clear the set and he would be very quiet and he would kind of just give them very quiet, subtle direction. So you don't have to be a particular way. That's the key thing. The way you should be, what you should try and cultivate in yourself when you're working with people, and whether you're doing headshot photography or, you know, fashion video, whatever it may be, if you're working with people, you've got to understand, what is it that makes you tick? What is it that will bring about a good, strong interaction with your subject and will also make them feel comfortable? And that's really, again, it goes back to, if you don't know this stuff, it's a voyage of self-discovery. And I didn't know this stuff because I never used to shoot people. And by that, obviously, I mean, aside from being a corporate kind of business executive project manager, I never used to direct people in front of my camera. I wasn't doing fashion work as a hobby on the side in London. That only came about from coming to New York. And it's still sometimes quite difficult, you know, especially in the fashion world, because it can be tricky sometimes. You know, people are often like trying to work out who you are and, you know, what your experience is. And you have to find ways to very quickly form at least something of a reasonable, authentic bond with your subject. And that doesn't come from mirroring anyone else. It comes from, I guess, understanding yourself and trying to get that across to your subject so that you can form like a good collaboration.
Absolutely. Yeah, I 100% agree. I have a lot of people in the crew that come up to me and say, I just can't, you know, my main problem is I can't use Peter's, you know, I've tried the Hurleyisms app and I just can't, people just don't react to it. You know, I don't want to down the Hurleyisms app because, you know, it's obviously a good product of Peter's. The only problem with the Hurleyisms, are you familiar with the app?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in fact, we filmed a little video, I think a year or so ago to promote his app. Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, if you're not 100% comfortable with, and I think Peter says that too, is that if you're looking at a list of phrases and none of them make sense for you to say, then choose something else. Instead, people are trying to force themselves into saying those things, and the other person in front of them that's being photographed is just feeling, you know, why is this? It feels awkward. Of course, it's going to be awkward because it's not coming out genuinely. All those things that are in that app are in Peter's brain, and I'm sure he would pull them off 100%. I don't use the app simply because that doesn't pop into my brain. If it does, I will write it. I'll write that down and then use that later, right?
Yeah, 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 definitely. No, I agree. And I on occasion use Hurleyisms, but I don't really use them so much because, it's not my style. But what I have found, and I think this is the purpose of why I created the app, was to kind of get you in the mindset to almost create your own Hurleyisms. And by that, I don't mean say something so sort of ridiculous or whatever that will make someone crack up, but it you get your own sort of style of what you can say to a client that is you, right? So I don't really say Hurleyisms, but I get and understand why he developed the app. But again, I think this goes back, there's a bit of an overlap with what we were saying previously. If someone gets a Hurleyisms app thinking, well, this is just perfect, this is going to give me exactly what I need, but then they're kind of not comfortable with saying some of the stuff, or they don't have the delivery, the confidence like what Peter does. When I see Peter in the studio shooting and he pulls out these Hurleyisms, we're all cracking up because Peter, it's how he talks, it's how he, you know, he can come out with nonsense. He laughs at his own weirdness and stupidity, and that breaks down all of the kind of it's like the icebreaker for a client that might be nervous because it's like the photographer's saying something stupid. They're not taking themselves like too seriously. The subject feels that they can also laugh and he starts to get stuff. But if you're finding it awkward, that's not the point. I think the point is Peter has this system of kind of just saying outlandish or weird things. That's an icebreaker. And I guess the idea is to get you to develop your own form of icebreakers. Exactly. Which is what I've done. Yeah, I don't say the same things he does, but I do laugh at the stuff he says, and it's genuine but it's not just what he's saying; it's how he's saying it, and that goes back to what we talked about, which is you've really got to find out what type of photographer you are, what gets what you want out of your subjects in the best way that you can get that stuff out. Ideally, making them feel relaxed, making them feel happy, making them feel confident in your ability. And that just comes sort of with time. And obviously there's a bit of self-discovery in there as well, you know?
Of course, you're finding your path. I remember once I was having dinner with Peter in New York when I was still in New York. And Peter said, you know, now that you're here, I have two challenges while I'm shooting. Because I was Peter's assistant at the time, so you know, yeah. I was there for every shoot. And Peter goes, my first goal is to obviously get the best picture of this person that I'm photographing. The second goal is to say something so outlandish in every shoot that I just floor you.
Yeah.
And that it was just general rule. And on every shoot, he would say something that would be so... I would never think that a human being could say this to another human being and pull it off, but he would do it like 10 times out of 10. It's amazing. He just has the personality for it.
Exactly. And that's the key thing. He does have that personality. And Peter, you know, Peter, for people listening that know Peter, I mean, Peter is not just a headshot photographer, right? He always gives that spiel about he was a model, bartender, sort of whatever dude. Peter was a very successful model. You know, he did big campaigns. He was photographed by Bruce Weber. That was the person who, in fact, got Peter to think about being a photographer, I believe, if I remember correctly. You're not just, especially if you're a male model, right? Because male models, even back in the 1950s, when Peter was a male model, way back when Peter was a male model, like, that was a difficult career. Like, you don't get shot by industry, like, greats like Bruce Weber if you're just getting by. So Peter was doing well there. He's also a gold medal holder for the US, like, sailing, the Olympic team or whatever. You know, Peter is, much as he likes to kind of come across as this sort of fun and, like, off the wall, like, headshot photographer guy or whatever, he's a very competitive sort of driven and confident person. And that's because of his sort of makeup and what he was and what he still continues to be. Like, he's very driven now. He's sailing again. He's been sailing for the last, I would say, like, year or two. He's been really back into his sailing, getting very competitive about it. And that is his character. That is his personality. But if someone's listening to this and they're like, well, I'm just not like that. I kind of am more introspective. I don't have that big personality. That is completely fine. The key is to work out what is within you that will come across as authentic, i.e. be yourself, and work out what you feel comfortable with when you're working with someone who's on the other side of your lens. That's the key, I think. It's not... And I fully believe that, you know, Peter says this as well. It's not to be Peter Hurley version 2. It's not that. Because clients or your subjects won't feel that authenticity, and it will be awkward, like you say, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I 100% agree. Find your own voice, people. That's the point. Yeah. Find your own voice. Yeah. All right. I want to ask you this. How important to you do you think it is to photographers nowadays, because obviously the industry is changing, how important is it for photographers to learn and to master video?
That's a great question.
I know, right?
No, it really is, because even since I came here, things have changed. When I came here, a lot of photographers, and even I thought this was a case, a lot of photographers were sort of like, I must learn video. I need to get into video. But I'm still trying to master photography. How can I do both? And let alone the editing side, right? They're like, how do I shoot video, let alone edit? And then how do I get into editing? And that's going to be such a time suck. And I thought it was going to be that a lot more photographers were going to be starting to do video as well. I think things have changed a little bit now. And obviously I work with different photographers, right? So I tend to work quite a bit within the fashion world. And I have a couple of friends here who are full-time fashion photographers. They don't do video. What I'm seeing, and this is where I think things naturally are progressing, is that if you're a good photographer, if you, after listening to this podcast and you've heard us, you know, harp on about vision and a style and all of that, if you have your vision, if you have your style, if you're successful, if you have a good social media presence, and some of my friends have a huge social media presence, I don't, but they're into the hundreds of thousands of followers. They're known. They are quite happy to continue doing what they're doing. What I'm seeing, and I think this is absolutely right, and it goes back to what I talked about my love of cinema and famous directors or cinematographers who also were stills photographers initially or always had a camera around their neck. Those photographer friends of mine will pull in talented videographers or cinematographers, or they'll act as a director, right? So they'll act as a director, and I'll work with them so that we capture the vision of what they're trying to get through the stills and what the client's looking for. And then I'll bring my eye to that and my touch as well, and particularly in the edit, and construct something so that there's a universal fit between the stills, between the video. And I don't think I really don't think that photographers need to learn video. In fact, I would say, and this is weird because obviously I do both, albeit predominantly video, I would say that it's much better to, as we would say, stick to your knitting. And that's a saying which is stick to the thing that you love, stick to the thing that you're good at, stick to the thing that you're passionate about. Don't spread yourself too thin. You don't have to do that. If you're a good photographer that becomes an even better photographer that becomes a great photographer, you will find plenty of video people who are good video people, who are great video people wanting to work with you. And it's far better to, I think, personally speaking, in my humble opinion, develop your eye, develop your vision, become known for consistent quality of output, get better and better clients, work your way up that ladder, you know, whether that's in the commercial photography business or the headshot business or whatever. And then video people will come to you and you will collaborate. And we live in an era where it is so easy to collaborate with people who are on even the other side of the world. You know, you don't even have to be in the same physical space. Someone can fly in, shoot something, go back to, you know, wherever they are, edit stuff. You bounce back and forward with revisions over, you know, the cloud or whatever, watching stuff, you know, through Dropbox and putting in comments or what have you. You don't need to even be in the same physical space. So to photographers thinking I must get into video, wow, how do I do that? That's a bit kind of overwhelming. I would just say you don't have to. Just focus on what you love, focus on what you're good at, focus on where you can make money without compromising your quality or the vision of what you're trying to achieve.
All right. Well, for people who are interested in video as well, because that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, editing is a huge, I would say editing is just as much of a big part of the video process as the shooting, right?
Absolutely agreed. Yeah. 100%.
So what would you say is something to look out for when people are getting into video and when they're editing? When you're editing, just remember to blank. What would blank be for you?
Remember your style, because editors have a style, right? And if you look at the great editors of cinema, who have worked with some of the great directors, those directors work with those editors time and time again, movie after movie, because they have a style. Now, the director is not just saying to the editor, right, here's the movie, go and edit it. They're sat down together, but there's an inherent style that the editor has. So again, I would reiterate what we've been talking about all along. Think about your style when it comes to the edit. Think about your vision. And that also informs how you shoot, because you should know going into a video shoot, if you are into video or if you're exploring the world of video and video editing, you should know when you get that camera set up to shoot your video, what the edit should already start to feel like. You should know how long it should be. You should know kind of what style it should be. And that doesn't matter whether you're on a paid client shoot. And for me, honestly, these days, most of my video work is paid stuff. It's very rare where it's not. In fact, actually, no. This last month just gone, I did a couple of fashion editorial shoots, which I haven't done in ages, which was really good. And those were unpaid. But most of my stuff is paid work. Okay, but it doesn't matter if you're not being paid for video work. It doesn't matter if you're doing personal video work, which is where I got started. Think about the style of the final video. Don't just think about the shots that you want to get. Think about what you're going to be doing with those. And look at other videos. Look at music videos, which is what I used to do. Look at movies. Look at documentaries, look at short films, look at stuff that animators are doing and putting out on the internet, and how those things are cut together, and why those things are engaging. So be open to all sorts of things. And as you rightly pointed out, Pedro, shooting and editing are two sides of the same coin. Shooting is 50% of the job. The rest is in the edit. And you can be the most amazing cinematographer, but if you're having to edit stuff up, and you don't really know either what the client wants or what you're looking to deliver for a personal project, you're kind of going to be floundering around a little bit, because the edit is where you craft the story or the message or whatever. And if it's kind of, you know, don't forget the blank, it's don't forget the style, don't forget the style, don't forget the vision of what you're trying to do with whatever it is you're shooting.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It all goes back to style. And at the end of the day, if you really think about it, that's really what clients buy. Clients buy style. Clients buy your style. Because, you know, anybody can take a pretty picture, but your client is going to look at your work and identify with the way you shoot, i.e. your style. So
Yeah. And not just style. I mean, I've been harping on about that, but I think if people have got this far in this podcast, they can probably tell there's a running theme here, right? And if they've read some of my F-Stoppers articles going back like 5 years, they would have seen me harping on about style then. Like that's a very personal view. But I do think it is incredibly important, because I think you're absolutely right. People are buying a style. I would just add as well, an equal measure of importance, I think, these days, because yes, people will want to buy a style. And yes, they would love to have Annie Leibovitz come and shoot for them because Annie has a particular style. But you might not be able to afford Annie Leibovitz, or you might have a style that's being developed, but people might not know who you are. I would say for anyone listening that is looking to continue to grow their business of photography or video or whatever, and not just have this as a side hobby, because if it's a side hobby, what I'm about to say doesn't really make any difference. I mean, it does, but not as much as if there's a commercial imperative. The key is to bring something to set, something to your shoot, that is good, positive vibes, right? That's the easiest way to describe it. I had a client on Friday who's pretty big in the makeup business here. It's the largest, I think it's the largest privately held makeup company in the States. They're international. I shoot campaign pieces for them, videos, campaigns. I shoot instructionals for them for social media. I do all sorts of stuff for them. And I got such a lovely piece of feedback from the team and the head of the company who I work with directly. And that's because when, quote unquote, the shit hits the fan, when people are stressed, when everyone's running around, and especially when someone senior, like the head of the company, is starting to get stressed out, your job is not just to bring your style, right? Your job is also, and this goes back to what I was talking about in terms of chilling people out, your job is also to be understanding of your client, is to be, I think, empathetic towards what they're going through, to not take shit personally if they're having a tantrum and throwing everything up in the air. Because, you know, I've worked with people with pretty big egos in this industry so far, and I take pride on the fact that they're good people fundamentally, but people's egos can sometimes get out of control. The stress levels that people deal with, especially if they're senior, can sometimes be extremely high, especially when time and money and everything are on the line. You have to bring something of good vibes. You've got to be good on set. You've got to bring good energy into the room. If you're not, and this goes back again to kind of that authentic element of who we are as people, if you're inauthentic, if you're trying to sort of fake it, if you're trying to say, well, I get booked because, you know, it's my style, of course, that's why I'm booked, you know, you've got to bring something else. And that's some kind of empathy and some good vibes and some kindness and some, you know, just smiles or whatever. If you're not bringing that stuff, I think you can have the most amazing style in the world. But if you're kind of like, if you suck the energy out of the room, you probably won't be invited back. Time and time again, I've had friends who, like some of those photographer friends of mine who bring me onto set, they're like, this client is so difficult and I really want you on this job. This is what I was having a conversation with last week. I'm double booked for a job. I don't think I can work with this one photographer, and she's really well known. And she's like, I just love having you on set, especially with this client, because they're so difficult. And it's so stressful, and you just like, it just makes it so much easier when you're there. And that means just as much to me as when you say something like, you know, you're known for a style, I can see a Dave Geffen photo, because with the commercial imperative in mind, there's so much competition. People can go to a better photographer, they can go to a better videographer, they might be able to find them for not much more money or the same money. So you have to bring something additional. And so for those people listening who are thinking about their business and growing their business, think about that as well. When you're working, even just on a small set, maybe it's just you and your subject as a headshot subject. Think about the energy you bring and the vibes that you sort of give off. I think that's really important. I think it's important for people to sort of get in touch with that side of things so that they can, basically bring good energy to a shoot.
There you go. Perfect. All right. That being said, we got to start wrapping up, Mister. Where can people go to find out more about you?
I do have my website that has not been updated for several years, but there is a smattering of my work on there. And this year I have said to myself, I have to redo my website, because I was saying to one of my friends, I have so much content, video stuff that I've shot that I've just not put up on my website. But if they do want to go to my website, they can find me at davidgeffen.com, which is David and then Geffen, G-E-F-F-I-N, geffen.com. And that's where you'll see my fashion stuff. If you want to look up some of my headshots, I'm on the Headshot Crew website. So you can find me there. And if you want to see some of my personal work, some of the stuff that is what inspires me to carry this film camera with me everywhere, every day for the last 4 years, you can go to my Instagram feed, and that's just at Dave Geffen, or one word, Dave Geffen.
There you go. All right, David, I want to thank you. It's been wonderful talking to you. This was awesome. It was a great conversation. And it's always fun to talk to you. You always bring this British perspective into everything you do.
Well, first of all, thanks. Thanks for having me on. It was really lovely to speak to you, Pedro, and really nice questions. I do like doing these things when people have done their homework and have thought about the questions, and we can really get into some stuff that's other than just the technical, you know. The question I have to you is, what's the British perspective that I bring?
I don't even know why I said that. I just thought it would be funny.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm as American as I am British. I'm an American citizen as of 2016. So I'm glad that I bring a little bit of Britishness still with me. I don't think I'm ever going to get rid of that, no matter how long I spend in the States. So,
yeah, well, yeah. The way in which you speak, I would say, is very much identifiable as a British man.
Interesting.
I mean, by your accent.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, New York is, we were talking about New York. New York is a bit of a melting pot, and there's Brits all over the place.
That's
here.
True, yeah.
No one really thinks too much about my British accent, I have to say. As soon as you leave New York and go into like Middle America, or, you know, I can't remember where I was recently, Miami, I was in Miami, even Miami. It's like, oh, where are you from? And
yeah, you're an alien.
Like, say this word. We just make you say words over and over, which you kind of, you know, forget about. But no, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure, and it was lovely to speak to you. And I can't believe it's been 3 years that was the last time we spoke. So hopefully it won't be another 3 years.
And yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think we can catch up next time I'm in New York. I don't know when, but yeah. I'm sure I'll come back soon.
Yeah, hit me up. And if I'm out in Portugal anytime soon, and I have been thinking about going back to Portugal, I haven't been back since 2000. I think it was actually the late 90s I was last in Portugal on a surf trip. I went surfing out there.
Oh, nice.
In Ericeira, I think it was.
Oh, that's where I live?
That's where you live?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, if I'm going on a surf trip anytime soon, I'm definitely staying by you, because I loved it out there. We had sardines on the beach. We tried to surf. I wouldn't say we exactly surfed, because we, you know, it was difficult, but it was great. Oh, I think you lived there. That's amazing.
Man, I've got an air mattress with your name written all over it.
All right. I might well take you up on that offer.
Sure. Come on over. Always good. All right, buddy. We got
to
go.
All right, Pedro. Lovely speaking to you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Cheers.
All right, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Thanks again to Dave. It was great talking to him. You know, it's always good to talk to people with their own perspective and their own opinions about things. And, you know, our conversation about style is so important. And I don't think it's talked about enough in photography. You know, we get so hung up on the technical that we sometimes forget that we need to find our voice and we need to stand out from the crowd. All right, guys, as usual, Headshot Crew, you know what the deal is. If you're not a member, you need to fix that, guys. It's the world's biggest, and I mean biggest, community on headshots. We're a global community. You get in there, you boost your photography. You also get jobs, by the way. Yeah, it's also a referral engine. So we have a find a photographer link. So if you're a client looking for headshots, the SEO on this website is incredible. If you search for headshots in any city on the planet, probably one of the first links that shows up is a Headshot Crew photographer. So it could be you. I don't know where you are in the world right now, but if you're not in the Headshot Crew, you're losing money. Just get in there, sign up. You get a free month if you sign up anyway. So you get a free month to test it out, and I guarantee you'll never leave. All right, guys. Have a great rest of day. Whatever you're doing, make sure you crush it. Just do what you do. And I will talk to you guys next time. All right? Enjoy yourselves. Bye.